Hi, this is Pastor Wilson with Renew Church OC. Thanks for joining our podcast. We're walking through the book of Luke, thinking about what it means to follow Jesus, to see the world the way he does, and to integrate his patterns into our life. I hope you enjoy the sermon today. I also wanted to point you to the description section where you can find the church's website. We would love for you to visit our church and consider investing in our ministry. There's two other links. One is a podcast that I do with a therapist at Renew Church, and we kick around issues like dating, mental health, and friendships. And lastly, there's a children's book series and a journal that I wrote with my wife and my mentor, and would love for you to look at those resources as well. Thank you so much for being a part of the Renew Church family, and I hope that you enjoy the sermon today. God bless. All right. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for bearing your hearts. We've had darker questions than that, but today was not an easy one, and I hope that you still had a chance to share about it. Before I move into a story, I just wanted to tell you guys that we were able to pass our bylaws, so really grateful for all of you who voted. We had 54 votes, 52 passed it, two people said no. And we want to honor, like, everyone's votes. Other people who said yes also had concerns. So our staff will reply to all of you, whether you wrote a comment out of a concern for a yes or no vote. But we're excited to move forward as a leadership team. It was just a ton of hours for us to put that thing together. So we're just happy we get to move forward. And hopefully you guys got to look behind the curtains to see how we are governing the church and our philosophy of leadership. All right, as I think about the last time, and maybe the worst time of an angry episode, I was standing in the hallway toward the door, and I just was totally losing it on my family, yelling at my wife and kids through two walls. She was trying to bathe them. And I couldn't contain it. I saw this toy, this beloved toy of Liam, and I picked it up, and I just slammed it against the ground, and it cracked in half. And my wife was angry and scared, and she just told me to leave. She was like, get out. And she said, you need to choose between Renew or our family. I ended up in Thousand Oaks, and even on the drive there, I asked what had happened. What got me to a point where I was totally unhinged? And I realized that the dam between my work life and my family had cracked open. And the bitterness and anger I felt at Renew during that time flooded into my family. And I had no way to close it. And over the month, my anger, my temper, my actions continued to hurt my family. I remember one of the worst months during that season. I had done 13 conflict resolutions in 30 days. One of the hardest two, I put back-to-back three-hour sessions each where both of us cried, and they both ended up leaving the church. There were things that I needed to grow in. There were some things that I had to apologize for. But I'm not going to share those stories. I'm going to share the two really dumb stories of people being dumb. So I remember it was sports ministry at the Musty Gym with air from the 80s because there was no circulation. And one of the guys I pulled aside because I wanted to have a conversation with him. He had just been very obviously rude to me. I would say hi, and he would just walk through, and we were like this close by, or I would walk into a group, and he would walk out really angry. So I was like, hey, come here, let's talk. And we had talked for about 30 minutes, and it came down to him being really mad at me because I didn't invite him to have coffee with me, even though he didn't tell me he wanted to have coffee with me. And so I was trying to explain to him, like, there's only two ways I would be able to ask you for coffee when you didn't ask me. One is I could mind read you, which I can't. And the second way is I would ask everyone for coffee alphabetically and randomly hit you.
Those two arguments did not satisfy him. And then the second dumb story is I was trying to do a conflict resolution with this gal, and I was talking to her husband prior about different things. And before she came in, he's like, okay, she's mad at you because she feels like you've been gossiping about her. And through your gossip, people aren't like responsive to her. They don't say hi to her anymore. They don't include her into things. And I was like, I looked at him right in the eyes, and I said, I have no idea how to communicate this to your wife, but I never think about her. Like, not only is she not a topic of conversation, but unless she's standing in front of me and we're saying hello, she's not even like in my mind. Like, she doesn't cross my mind. We weren't close. They came to church sporadically. It was just a hi-bye relationship. And somehow she was really mad at me for, you know, gossiping. So I think about that season of my life and how burnt out I was. And I'm grateful for this episode in Luke chapter 10, verse 38 to 42, because it shows some of the signs of burnout that we can all experience. And when I think about Martha, I see her as a close friend of Jesus, someone who might have grown up with him alongside of her sister Mary and Lazarus. There's a lot of speculation, but some of the scholarship is speculating that they were hometown friends, that the sisters were like Jesus' sisters, you know, they were that close. Lazarus was like his best man or his best friend. And so as Jesus became prominent in ministry, Martha and Mary hosted him often. And it felt like this was a haven in which Jesus rested from ministry. It's like he was ministering to everyone else every day, but here he was being ministered to. This was a place where he sought refuge, where he could heal, where he could take deep breaths and be relaxed and enjoy his time with hometown friends who didn't see him primarily maybe as a rabbi, but as someone that they grew up with, someone that they loved in ways that maybe other people didn't know or hadn't grown up with him. I think about some of my close friends, and I've been just really grateful that at Renew, I would say my closest friends are at this church. Me and Ben grew up together. I slept in his like study room when I was mentoring him. I came in, I was tired from basketball, and I just slept there, and I woke up and I left. I slept in Mark and Hiroko's living room many times, just knocking out after church on Sundays. I slept in Ernest's study room as he was preparing for the LSAT, and I was in seminary. Jonathan and Kristen have become very close friends of mine, and their house has hosted our family many times. And so I'm really grateful, and I hope that you get and I get to have close friends here, where you go into their house and it feels like your home, and you can leave a sign of affection in laying down in their living room and taking a nap. And so I'm super thankful for Jesus having friends like that in Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They weren't ministry. They were just a home for him to rest in, a family for him to feel like so comfortable and safe in. But here we also see Martha stressed out. So as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, they came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. As you know, in ancient times, hosting was a big deal. Who you hosted and how you hosted spoke to who you were. The reputation of your family was garnered by the way you hosted. And so as Jesus is rising in prominence, there is a pressure for their family to host Jesus well. And then I also love Martha's relationship with Jesus. When I think about the disciples' dialogue with Christ, a lot of it is represented by Peter. And I think outside of Peter, Mary and Martha might have the most dialogue in conversation with the Lord. And here's one of them. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, You are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. So Martha's distracted by all the preparations. She feels the pressure of hosting. And then there her beloved sister is, just sitting there listening to Jesus, and she feels frustrated. And it's almost a testimony of their relationship where she can, like, talk to Jesus like a bro, you know? Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? And Jesus rebukes his disciples sometimes harshly, but with Martha, I feel like he's so gentle with her. He acknowledges where she is. He acknowledges her feelings. And without belittling her, he lifts up Mary and tells her that she had chosen the better. In the next slide, though, I do want to point out some of the signs of burnout from Martha. And this might just be a point in time. I don't think it's necessarily indicative of a whole season or her character. It was for me, but we do see some of those signs for Martha as well, that she was distracted. She said, Lord, don't you care? She judged her sister. Jesus describes her as worried and upset. And I think that there's times where we move into our occupation or ministry or relationships with the best of intentions. When I share my story, it's kind of a mesh of all three. It's being burnt out at work. It's being burnt out trying to serve the Lord. It's being burnt out relationally. And I wonder if you felt the same way. Maybe as a teacher, you went in wanting to cultivate the mind and hearts of students. But it's easy to get dragged into complaining with other teachers or the bureaucracy of the school. Maybe as a nurse or a doctor, you wanted to have compassion on your patient. But one day, that last patient who's rude and obnoxious just broke you, and you're just faking empathy. Or maybe you're working in a company, and you really believed in the mission of the company, but you saw the greed behind it, and you feel pulled into the same. I had a conversation with my friend. He's a prison guard. Not a guard, but he works in the prison, and he does a lot of the maintenance. So he works with a lot of the maintenance staff, the facility management, and he's walking through the prisons all the time. But he has such a joy about him. He's very playful. He works with RFKC, with me, and we've built a friendship that way. And you would have never guessed that he's in prison, like, every day. And I asked, how do you retain your joy? How do you retain, like, your childlikeness when you're with prisoners and with prison guards? How do other prison guards, are they able to do what you do? And he says, you know, some of them have a switch. They'll go in, they'll cuss out a prisoner and demean them. They'll walk into the staff area, flip the switch, and, like, put on a smile. And he's like, how do you do that? Others of them, after they leave the gate and they go into their family, they flip a switch and they're a different person. And others, he sees them start to callous and change, and their character becomes hardened. But he says for him, because he knows the Lord, because he went in wanting to help prisoners as well, that he tries to dignify every person. And even as they lash out at him, he's able to put up a wall and not have it corrode his heart. And it's so evident in the way that I interact with him. But again, we can go into things for good reasons and then slowly see ourselves burn out and our character start to shift. So here are some of the distinctions of burnout, the road to burnout. First, again, Martha is described as distracted. In the Greek, being distracted means being dragged around. So it's not just that Martha was distracted by the expectations of her gender and role as a host. She wasn't just distracted by the demands of preparing a meal and preparing her home. It wasn't just what she was distracted by, but who she was distracted from. That as she's looking around and being pulled at the strings of every person's expectations, she's missing Jesus while serving him. And I wonder if in the busyness and in the priorities of our life, if we start missing Jesus, even when we want to serve him in our family, relationship, and at work. When the word worry is two Greek words pushed together, the word divide and the word mind. So it literally means a divided mind. And this is anxiety-inducing when our mind is split into many pieces. Worry can make the one thing, the most important thing that Jesus is talking about, be one of many things. And it goes from the only thing that matters to maybe the bottom of the list as our mind is being pulled in different directions. I'm sure Martha wanted to sit with Jesus as well. I'm sure she wanted to listen to him and to spend time with her close friend. But that one thing that mattered most became one of many things. And then we see Martha upset. Not just upset with Mary, but she was upset with Jesus. She said, "Jesus, don't you care?" And I think that when we get caught in ministry or in family, when we feel burnt out, we can feel like Jesus doesn't care about us anymore. That he's just another Pharaoh, demanding us to work harder and longer, demanding us to break boundaries in order to get tasks done. It's what we do instead of who we are that he cares about. And then we forget that it was Martha all along who wanted to host Jesus. She was the one who invited him in. She's the one who chose to prioritize other things. Jesus says that his burden is easy, his yoke is light, that he's gentle and humble in spirit. And when we feel like we're being crushed by work and anxiety, it's probably us. It's probably our mind divided and us at the end of other people's strings than it is Jesus trying to get us to do more. We see Martha as judgmental, judging her sister for sitting at the feet of Jesus. And often when we take our eyes off of Jesus and ministry becomes about other people, we can get caught between being jealous or being judgmental. We look down and we're judgmental because people aren't loving Jesus as much as we are. They aren't serving him as much as we do. They aren't sacrificing or giving as much as we have given. But that's because we've taken a human perspective. We've taken our eyes off of the one thing and we are looking around. And we could be jealous as well as we look around at those above us. We can ask, how come we don't get that spot in service? How come we don't get appreciated the way this person is appreciated? Or we don't have the tight-knit friends that this person has. We get caught between judgment and jealousy when we forget about the why. We forget that Jesus is the reason why we're serving and trying to be purposeful in our occupation and in ministry. And lastly, we can feel fatigued, just tired, as Martha was. So lastly, here are some heart checks, because for me, I think there's times where I know I'm totally burnt out, but I know it when it's too late. I know it's when it's obvious. I know it when I'm breaking plastic toys. But how do we know earlier than that? How can we ask ourselves some questions that check our hearts along the way? One question we can ask is, Jesus, do I love you more as I serve you? Because ironically, we could love Jesus less when we serve him. We could feel like, again, he doesn't care. We could disconnect with him relationally, but use ministry or service to our family as a facade. Of course I love you. Look at what I'm doing. But when you just stare at him face to face, you realize I'm actually really far away. Do I love the people that I serve? Or is it just obligatory? Is it with bitterness? Is it with envy and judgment that I serve? Am I serving to one up someone? And again, these are subtle and subversive thoughts. It's easy to cover them with Christian lingo and language. But when we look deep inside, when we look around the room of our small group, when we look around the room on Sundays, are these people that we love? And are we serving out of love for them? And as I serve, who am I becoming? Because in those years of ministry, as I was serving burnt out, I was becoming less like Jesus. I was trying to pastor, but being less like the shepherd. That ministry was actually deforming my soul. And Nina was watching my character and integrity disintegrate as I served. Less kind, less patient, less loving, less gentle. But again in verse 41, Jesus answered, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." When I think about what it means to have only one thing, it's interesting because Jesus doesn't say only one person is needed, like you just need me. He says one thing. And I think he's just opening up that category a little bit more. The one thing is loving Jesus and being present with him. The one thing is that you're making eye contact with Jesus every day. That once a week you're able to sit and push work aside and rest in the Lord. How are we doing in this one thing of being with the Lord, of being present with him, being filled by him before we serve? And there's a lot that happens when we prioritize this one thing. Instead of being distracted, in the next slide, Mary is tethered to Jesus. Again, it's easy to feel pulled and dragged around by the expectations of many. But Mary was tethered to one thing and one person. She had her eyes on the Lord. And she wanted to be about what he wanted. And there was a sense that what he wanted most wasn't for a better meal or a cleaner house, but he longed to be with her. He longed to see her, his close friend, and to spend time together. Instead of having her mind divided, she was single-minded towards Jesus. And that's one of the ways that we don't worry, that we don't hold all of these different things in our mind, but we're like, Jesus, what does it look like to just be about you and for everything else to serve you? That everything else in our life serves being loving Jesus and walking in his purpose. So there's not many masters, but only one. Jesus, instead of feeling judged or being judgmental, her silence speaks of this security and anchoredness in the Lord. She didn't have to defend herself. Again, in her single-minded attention to the Lord, she waited for his response at the demands of her sister. And I wonder if we have that kind of rootedness in our soul, that when people speak about us poorly, when people judge us, or when people praise us and encourage us and give us accolades and likes and hearts, there's a steadiness to our soul because we're not letting people speak into our identity or our value or who we are. Only Jesus gets to say and speak into those things. So there's a settledness in our soul. I see a settledness in Mary's soul in the midst of this drama that was unfolding in front of her. I see a settledness in Jesus' soul. He doesn't back down at the criticism of the Pharisees. He doesn't stay at towns because he's applauded there. He doesn't succumb to Herod's request of being entertained or answer Pilate's questions. He knew who he was. He knew when to move, when to stay, and what he was called to do. And the accolades and criticisms of others never swayed him. It says that he didn't entrust himself into the hands of men because he knew what was in their hearts. I wonder if we've done that. I wonder if we've entrusted ourselves into the hands of others instead of saying, Jesus, my heart, my identity is for you alone, to speak into, to describe, to assign. She wasn't upset. Mary had an unanxious presence to her, and she was filled and rested in sitting with the Lord. I want to make this tangible for us. I want to have us prioritize and organize our life around this one thing of being with Jesus. So here are some simple ways in which you can do that. What does it look like to have the one thing be the most important thing in your life in a daily way? To organize your life around sitting with Jesus, hearing his word, and responding to him. One of the ways that we've wanted to give you a tool for this is through the Bible plan. And many of you might have very vibrant personal devotional lives, and you have all the tools you need to engage with the Lord. But if you don't, if it's been inconsistent and you're grappling with what to do with the Lord every day, I just want to invite you into our Bible plan. We're in the a Lent series. People have been dropping out because they don't want to read the same passage 6 days in a row. But, you know, it's almost over, and I've loved it. And I try to post something every day. And I hope that you would spend time with me if you don't have something on your own. And that as a community, we would gather around God's word daily and put down our thoughts and questions and reflections, encouraging each other, drawing each other in around God's word. And that you would habit stack this with prayer for the community around you and with silence and solitude with the Lord, sitting with him, making eye contact with him, enjoying his presence. I hope that you'll set up organizing your life around weekly rhythms. And most importantly, around Sabbath, that your Sunday isn't defined by an hour and a half in this space, but that this would launch you into a 24-hour period of rest. Ruth Barton says that this rhythm of work and rest, this seventh day of rest, is embedded in the nature of God. And it's out of who he is, this rhythm of rest and work, of stepping back and enjoying his creation, that he embeds this into creation itself. He gives us this rhythm from the 7 days of creating the earth. Before sin flooded humanity, we were able to emulate God in working and emulate God in resting. And so can you spend a day saying, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to check emails or think about my project. I'm going to put the whole thing down to be with the Lord and to drink deeply of rest from him, to be with my church family, to be with my closest friends, and to rest from work. When we do that, we're able to remember that we're not slaves. We're sons and daughters. We're not defined by what we do, but we're defined by who we are in the Lord. There's a theologian that said, if you're not resting, then you're enslaved to something. I love that. If you're not resting, then you're enslaved to something. And when God pulls the Israelites out of Egypt, he gives them this radical command to rest, not only themselves, but the foreigners, their donkeys, their slaves. Everyone is to take a day to remember that we're not providing for ourselves, but we're trusting the Lord to provide. And lastly, we want to organize our life around seasonal rhythms as a church. A lot of us are driven by a secular year calendar, but I hope that as a community, we can come together and support each other in building out annual rhythms around the church calendar, a calendar that has been established for 2,000 years. This rhythm of Advent and Lent and our all-church retreat. So Advent, we've paused every Sunday for 5 minutes to do breath prayer as a way to exemplify and model breath prayer and hopefully every day of Advent for you as you spend time with your kids flipping blocks, as you sit around the candle that we bought you and think about the Lord. We have a season of Lent that we're in right now, trying to carve out space to prioritize the Lord. Because making God a priority means that we deprioritize other things, right? We can't be focused on the Lord if we're also on our screen. We can't wake up early to be with him if we're watching Netflix till 2 a.m. And Lent is a practical way to say, I'm going to start carving out space for these 40 days in order to be with Jesus. Good Friday is an amazing, immersive experience. We're going to have it here in this room. And we want to set up a spaces for you to be with Jesus through the last couple of days of leading up to Calvary. And again, silence and solitude, thinking of him and being immersed in those moments. And then All Church Retreat for us has been a way, again, to tool us to be with the Lord, to do that one thing well. So we can have a speaker and do four Sundays in one weekend, but instead we've carved out sessions of 2-3-hour blocks for you to be with the Lord and for us to give you tools in learning how to sit with Jesus. I'm hoping that you would consider organizing your life around with this community around the Lord. The goal isn't to do these things, but to learn how to do the one thing, to fall in love with Jesus and to be with him. I remember sitting in Thousand Oaks for 3 days and just asking the Lord to heal me. I didn't like ministry anymore, but, you know, I still had seminary debt. It's all the work experience I had. And in some ways, I just felt trapped at church. My wife was ready to call it quits. And I didn't know how I got here. Like, I didn't know how I got to this place of deep unhealth. And so I was sitting in the hills of Thousand Oaks, just looking down, and I just spent 4 or 5 hours up there, days at a time. And maybe the most important thing was Jesus just drawing me back to those first moments of meeting him. To me as a kid, spending days and days at home sick, in bed, vomiting every 5 minutes throughout the night, gasping for air because of asthma, and there was no solutions. But during that time, when my mom wasn't sitting next to me, I would be listening to tapes and tapes of the Bible. And there was this real sense that Jesus was there. I remember this one time when we were waiting for the doctor's office to open because I needed the machine that to help me breathe. And every breath felt like it could be my last. I was gasping for air. And during that moment, I just remember Jesus sitting right next to me. And it was as if his hand was opening and expanding my chest with me. I remember being in elementary school and I didn't have friends to play with year after year. I didn't know who to sit with at lunch. I didn't know, I avoided kids because they mostly bullied me. I sat with Jesus and said, hey, like, will you hang out with me? And I felt like he did. I felt like from a really early age, Jesus was an anchor for my soul, was my closest friend, and was in the trenches with me. And I told him at an early age, like, if I could introduce this friend to others full-time in ministry as a pastor, that's what I wanted to do. And I wonder if that's why you became a Christian. I wonder if that's why you're serving and coming out today and still walking with the Lord, because you have moments with him that you remember. Like, I just love you, Jesus. That being with you, singing to you, praying, and spending time with you, that is why I became a Christian. That's why I'm here. That's what matters the most. Isn't that what defines your closest friends? The ones that you don't have to have an agenda. You don't have to plan a trip. You don't need alcohol or coffee, even though those two things are great. You can just sit and watch the sun go down and just talk for hours. And what you're looking forward to the most is you get to be with them. Isn't that why you got married? Because you found someone that you love hanging out with, that you love wasting time with. And isn't that the one thing of being Christian? And I loved being with the Lord. And I kind of forgot. I got distracted. I got anxious. I was burnt out. But Mary reminded me that one thing is just being with the Lord, and that all the other things has to come out of that, has to be driven by that. God, we thank you for your word. We're reminded that the first commandment, the first thing you care about, the first thing we are to do, our first priority is to love you. Help us to do that this week. Thank you that you're attentive to us, that you wait for us, that you died to forgive us so that we can sit with you in your presence. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We're really grateful that you'd spend time listening to the sermon series. And we also wanted to point you to a few other resources. My wife and I wrote a children's book collection helping kids bridge their faith with God's calling in their life as a businessman, as a doctor or nurse, and as a creative. Secondly, we wrote an adulting journal which helps young adults think through this transition into adulthood, whether it's transitions in friendship, family, faith, or calling. And lastly, I want to point to a podcast that myself and another church member, Roy Kim, who's a therapist, co-host together. It's called The Same Boat. We talk about relationships. We just finished a series on dating. We think back to an English ministry church, and we just tackle all kinds of topics that are relevant to our life. I hope that those resources enrich your life as well. And lastly, if you're looking to partner with us, on our website, we have a give section. You could give to our general fund and continue to serve our church through partnering with us financially. But if you scroll down, we have quite a few local missionaries that have called Renew Home. If you read their bio, there's also a section to give to each one of our local missionaries. We hope that all of them would be fully funded going into this year. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, and hope to have you join us again.